want to know what we want to hear what God's saying to us, and we believe that God speaks to us through the Bible, that He tells us about Himself, and He also calls on us to live and shows us how to follow Him. So that's what we do. We turn to the Bible every week, you'll see if you've got one of these. Inside is the Bible passage that I'm working from today, talking from today, and it's all about the wise men. So Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from the eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, "Where is the newborn King of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we've come to worship him." King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of religious law and asked, "Where's the Messiah supposed to be born?" "In Bethlehem, in Judea," they said, "for this is what the prophet wrote. And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are not least among the ruling cities of Judah, for a ruler will come from you, who will be the shepherd for my people Israel." Then Herod called for a private meeting with the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. Then he told them, "Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child, and when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go and worship him too." After this interview, the wise men went their way, and the star they'd seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshipped him. And they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Well, this is the second time, actually, this year that I've talked about the wise men. Not on a Sunday morning, the other one was on a Friday. But in that other talk, I talked about the gifts that the wise men brought for Jesus. I'm not going to do that today. I'm going to talk about something very different. You might find this story, which you know is repeated across countless Christmas cards and so on, but you might find it, this idea of following a star to find a baby Jesus, more fanciful than factual. You might have seen this joke on Facebook this week. It says, "A virgin birth, I can't believe, but finding three wise men." Matthew, in his gospel, his book about Jesus, is writing to defend or to prove his belief that Jesus was this Messiah figure promised by God, a king sent to save his people. Last week, I was looking at Matthew, and we saw how Matthew was defending the virgin birth. This week, he's not defending the wise men, the idea that men can be wise. He's defending something else, and we'll come to that in a moment. But first, if you don't mind, I was just going to ask Rod and Joe a couple of really simple questions. Firstly, how did you let people know? How did you let your friends and family here know that Isaac had been born? How did you let them know that? What did you do? Okay, your mum was with us. Okay, so she... And your mum told everyone. Okay. So, mum, how did you do it? How did you tell everyone? Telephone? Yeah. Text? Okay. You on Facebook? Did you put it on Facebook as well? Put it on Facebook too. Yeah. Social media, that's the way to do things these days, isn't it? Telephone. Oh, that's an ancient invention. Let's use social media. So you didn't... There wasn't like a star in the sky. No? No. Okay. And the friends and your family, when you heard, maybe some of you came to visit, is that right? Did you have many visitors come to see the baby? A few, yeah. Yeah, some. You can't just drop everything the moment the baby's born, but, you know, over a period of time. There was a full moon, was there? Ah, I see. Well, if we... If he starts howling, we'll know what the issue is. So you didn't get like a bunch of men who you'd never met from a place you'd never been to come to visit you? No, bringing strange presents. No, that didn't happen? No, okay. I want to suggest something to you today. That the problem with the star leading the wise men to Jesus is not that it's improbable, because actually I think it's very possible, and I'll show you that in a moment. The problem is that actually it's just plain inappropriate. Alright, that's the actual problem. See, Matthew, if he's making it up, if he's making this story up about the star and the wise men, he is shooting himself in the foot. Okay? He is guilty of gross stupidity in writing this. And again, I'll show you that in a moment. We're told, if you ever look at the very start, verse 1, there are these wise men from eastern lands who arrive. So who are these guys? Well, their name, the word that Matthew himself would have used, he was writing in ancient Greek nearly 2,000 years ago, was magi. It's the word that gives us our English word magic. These guys were into sorcery, astrology. They were also amazing mathematicians. That's a dividing line, if you like, between astrology and astronomy. There wasn't one in their day. It was the same thing. Okay. For us, one is science, the other is make-believe, but we'll come back to that. The eastern lands, well, that probably refers to Persia. Persia was the Roman Empire's great rival at the time. And these guys, we're not said they came from a particular city. I think Matthew would be well capable of doing that if he wanted to. Instead, he just says eastern lands, which kind of implies they were travellers. They had no fixed address. And just to be doubly clear, they are not kings. That's what they're not. They're not kings. Instead, what they do is they go to visit kings. And they make, and Matthew makes that very, very obvious. They come to visit kings.
Persia,
yes.
Why Persia?
Because that was a centre, a great centre for this kind of astrology and so on. This is where it came from. And Persia is to the east of Judea. So what they do is they see and they interpret some astrological event, which to them means that a new king has been born in Judea. That's what they are doing. That's what these astrologers would do. They see something in the sky, it means new king in Judea, newborn king. Astrology was very important in those days. Augustus, the Roman emperor, was very, very into this. He loved astrology. And Herod, although he may not have been, he certainly would have taken the Magi's question of, where's this baby? We've seen his star. They would have taken that very seriously. Herod was a great friend of Augustus. And astrology is still popular today. It's easy to find horoscopes online, also in well-respected newspapers, magazines. Steve Wright, Radio 2, every Monday afternoon has Shelley von Strunkel come in. So I thought I'd look up my horoscope for the last week. Do you want to hear my horoscope from the last week? It says this. This comes from the Telegraph, by the way, which must be a very authoritative source. I'm sure they pay a lot of money to whoever writes this stuff for them. From midweek, when the romantic, charismatic planet Venus enters Leo, recent tensions in your private life are due to ease. So relax, and don't look for problems where there are none. With so much action in your chart's most psychic zone, you also have a real sixth sense for someone's deeper feelings. I wasn't myself aware there were tensions in my romantic private life. Maybe Helen feels very differently about that. You'll have to ask her later on. But why do we do this? Why do we still have these in our magazines and whatever? Is this entertainment? Is it entertainment? Is it a form of entertainment? Do people take them seriously? I don't know. You tell me. I don't really know. I mean, why do we still think that the relative positions of large blobs of gas and rock in space, somewhere out there, have any influence over what happens down here? Why do we believe that? And in any event, what am I supposed to do with that horoscope that I just read? I don't actually understand what I should do. See, I can moan about it and rationalise it, but for Jews, it was far more serious. And as a Christian, I'd go along with their point of view. See, this is what it says in the Jewish law, in Deuteronomy 18, verses 9 to 12. It says, when you enter the land the Lord your God is giving you, be very careful not to imitate the detestable customs of the nations living there. Don't let your people practice fortune-telling or use sorcery or interpret omens, say like a star in the sky, I don't know, or engage in witchcraft or cast spells or function of mediums or psychics or call forth the spirits of the dead. Anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord. So Matthew, a Jew himself, would have sympathised. Astrology was outlawed. You did not do astrology as a Jew. You just didn't do it. God had said no. The second issue is they had no right to know. Jesus was not their king. They were not Jews. Why on earth didn't call Jews instead of these foreigners to come and worship this baby king of the Jews? You know, even if the Magi would have hailed kings as gods amongst their people, for them to come with this purpose of worshipping this baby seems a little bit bizarre. And that's why I'm saying that inappropriate is the order of the day. This is inappropriate. If it's not true, Matthew is recording something which was a complete turn-off on the basis that astrology was outlawed. This was a stumbling block to the very people he was trying to convince that the story was true. So what about the star then? Isn't that wholly improbable in the first place? Could there have been a star? And if so, what was it? Well, here's the sciencey bit. Just notice a couple of things that Matthew mentions in here. If you look at verse 3, it says, Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard about this star. Very often when people picture, or you look at a Christmas card of the three wise men, they're following some star in the sky that is so abnormally bright, everybody on earth could see it at once, yeah? When I was in my teens, there was a comet that was visible. And people wondered whether the comet was what the star was that the wise men followed. The comet that was back in the 90s was Halley Bopp or something, with a really funny name. But you could see it, couldn't you? Everybody could see it. Wasn't hidden. Everybody could see it. If it was something that obvious, why was Herod so deeply disturbed that there was a star that nobody had seen? He hadn't noticed it. No one had noticed it. No one knew about it unless you were a Magi, because you were the only one that could interpret this kind of stuff. Here's something else it mentions. Verse 7. It talks about the star first appearing. That implies there was a time it wasn't visible, and then a time it was visible all of a sudden. And later on, it must have disappeared again. Down through the centuries, there's been a lot of thought that's gone into this. And actually, I think a real breakthrough came. The year was 98. A guy named Molnar in the States, who was a professional astronomer, he started researching. Instead of just looking at the stars and going and saying, well, what could it have been, possibly? He studied from the opposite end. He studied from the Magi's end. And he looked at the astrological practice and the interpretations that they would have done, what they thought, and so on and so on. And he drew some really interesting conclusions. See, the solution, as far as he was concerned, might lie in these three little words, innocuous as it is. We saw his star as it rose, in verse 2, as it rose. And he's saying that this term is actually an astrological term for a morning star, a star that's only visible at dawn. All right? There we go. It's a nice picture for you. All right? That is dawn. That is a morning star. Except it's not a star. It's the planet Jupiter. Just like Venus and Mars, if you know a little bit about the night sky, you might know that you can see them at dawn and you can see them at dusk, but you can't see them in between. It's the same kind of thing with Jupiter. And so you get this appearance and the timing for astrological interpretation, which is linked in a way that I don't quite understand, but it's linked to this sign for Judea, for the land of the Jews, in the astrological thoughts. And when this came together as one, the Magi said, right, that means newborn king. Newborn king of the Jews. And they see that, they see Jupiter, and they head off. They head for Jerusalem, where the king is, where the palace is. Because where else would the king be born but in the palace to another king? That would be totally normal. So they head for Jerusalem. When they get there, the story tells us, of course, there is no baby in Jerusalem, and Herod is completely shocked. The next thing that happens is that it guides them to Bethlehem. Bethlehem is only a few miles south of Jerusalem. But in the story, what happens is the direction of the star, or the appearance of the star, confirms what the wise men are told by Herod and his advisors, that the baby should be born in Bethlehem if it is the Messiah. And so we're told the star guides them to Bethlehem. Again, how can that be? Does that really work? It seems like an odd thing to do, odd thing to say. Well, here's the thing. Jupiter doesn't travel from east to west across the sky in a single night. That is not what happens with it. Over time, it changes position relative to the horizon, relative to other stars, because of the rotation of the planets around the sun. All the other stars are so far away, they just seem to stand still. But the planets that go around the sun are changing position all the time with one another. And so this case, Jupiter, it reaches its south and westerly points before then moving back northeasterly. And so on this journey that Jupiter does, it appears to stop, which is an astrological term again. It appears to stop. They recognise that stars could do this. They recognise this could happen. That Jupiter, for example, could stop in the sky, and it would do that for about a week in between its different course, its moving backwards and forwards. And so when it stopped, they stopped. And the stopping of it, we're told in verse 10, is the cause of their joy. And so NASA, or rather Molnar, using NASA computer systems, produced models of possible alignments and found a perfect fit in 6 or 5 BC. Jupiter, with the constellation Aries that represented Judea, and so on and so on. So is this the right date? Is this what happened? I'd love to give you a definitive answer, of course. But I can't, because it's based on modelling. It's a theory. But before we throw the star story out of the window again, saying, oh, if you can't prove it, it can't have happened, can I just mention something else? Here's Herod, right? King of Judea. Herod the Great. We know he lived. We know he reigned. Traditionally, he died in 4 BC. If you read a history book, that's what it will tell you. Actually, we're not totally sure he did die in 4 BC. 4 BC might have been when he started sharing power with his sons, because he was getting old, and that he actually died in 1 BC. So when did Herod die? Was it 4? Maybe it was 3. Maybe it was 2. Maybe it was 1. When did Herod die? Not totally sure. Does that mean Herod never existed? No, of course not. It just means that we can't pinpoint it absolutely. So even historians can't agree on the reign of Herod. So my conclusion, and I think this is a fair one, is that while we may not know all the historical details about the star and about the dates, you can't just dismiss the story because it's in the Bible or because we don't have all the details, because it was written before modern astronomy. Just because of those things, you can't dismiss it. And so with science in support of the story, actually, and with Matthew choosing to record something which would otherwise be a complete turn-off if it weren't true, I think this story has an awful lot going for it. An awful lot. In the end, you see, the issue is not for the dating, it's the place. This is what Matthew wants to prove to us. This is what Matthew wants to show us. Got it coming up separately, have I? But basically, Bethlehem is mentioned 5 times in this passage. The whole point of this story is to show us that Jesus was born in Bethlehem. To show us that that prophecy that the leading priests and teachers speak about to Herod had come true in Jesus. That's the whole point. The wise men arrive. They say, where's this newborn king of the Jews? Herod threatens because he's the king of the Jews. Except he wasn't there by birth. He was there because Augustus put him there. Augustus made him king. Here's a king who's king from birth. That's a totally different kettle of fish. And that's quite threatening for Herod. So all he can do is he turns. Because he recognises that this phrase, newborn king of the Jews, the birth of a king, has to be something to do with this old bloodline. This old bloodline that goes all the way back to the old kings of Israel. And that's why he calls in his leading priests and teachers. That's why he asks them about the Messiah. And they give him this prophecy, 700 years old, written by a man named Micah. The prophets of ancient Israel, saying that the Messiah was going to be born in Bethlehem. And Herod is definitely worried. You might have picked up when I read the story through for us, the way that I talked about when Herod was talking about going and worshipping him too. But that clearly was not Herod's intention. We know that from what happens afterwards. God warns the wise men in the dream not to return to Herod. And after that you get this terrible thing where Herod goes to Bethlehem and kills every baby boy under two to try and make sure that whoever it is, he's got him. This figure of Messiah, this king of the Jews, is a threat to Herod. And the funny thing about it really is that it prefigures what's going to go on in the rest of Matthew. Jesus' life starts with threat, attempts on his life, rejection, yes, by the people in authority, by Herod, but also everybody in Jerusalem, we're told in verse 3, was disturbed by the news. It made them uncomfortable. They had a cosy thing going on with Herod. They were quite happy there. Jesus was coming in and upsetting them. And Jesus' life then ends the same way it begins. Because he's rejected, he's arrested, he's beaten up, and he's executed. He's executed by the people who should have welcomed him. But you see, there's two sides to every coin. The other side of the coin is opening the door. Herod rejects this king of the Jews. Herod hates him, he wants him dead. And instead, what God does is something extraordinary. He uses a system that he doesn't like, he doesn't agree with, doesn't support, didn't institute, which takes people away from listening to him even, to bring wise men from a different country entirely to come and worship this Jesus. The door is open for anybody who's ready to receive Jesus. That's the point. Herod didn't welcome him. The wise men did. You don't have to be a Jew living in Jerusalem in the time of Jesus to welcome him. I said the door is open to all of us. I found this in the news this week. You might just be able to see it. It's a kid's letter to his dad. It's quite emotional, this actually, but anyway, I'll read this to you. So this came from the ITV News on Wednesday this week. Child's heartbreaking Christmas letter for dead dad found tied to a balloon sparks online search. The letter is covered in hearts and includes the youngster's Christmas list, as well as a wish for the child's dad to leave a note under their pillow. This is what the note says. It says, "Hi Dad, just writing a letter to tell you I'm missing you and tell you news. I'm sure you know I'm in foster because Mum is sick and my ear is blocked from Monday, whatever that means. Tomorrow we're leaving. I really miss school and you. I know you're up in heaven, but are you safe? Oh yeah, before I go, here's my dream and Christmas list. My dream is for you and my daddy to put a note under my pillow that you wrote. My Christmas list: boot stroke studs, Astros, rebounder net, new Premier League ball, Real Madrid kit. I think you might have been into football. Bye Daddy, I love you." The message was found by a man named Stuart McColl in a field in Fife. He now hopes to find the child and get them their dream presents. Stuart said, "I was out walking my dog when I found the letter tied to a sparkly blue helium balloon in a field. This was just too sad to ignore. I've never done anything like this before, but it's a really tragic story, so it'd be great to do something to help this person who's having such a tough time. Unfortunately, there's been no solid leads as to who the child is yet, but the image of the letter's been posted and shared a lot on social media. It's also been shared with foster agencies as well. It's pretty ambitious, and it's touched a lot of people. I really hope we can find the child, but even if we can't, I'd like to set up a charity page to buy presents for children living in foster care this Christmas. People have already offered to donate money to help get presents for the child." It's one of those lovely Christmas heartwarming stories, isn't it? Both heartbreaking and heartwarming at the same time. I guess you might say that this child was kind of searching for his dad. He knew his dad was in heaven, really, but he was searching to make contact with him. That's what he really wanted. And I guess for us, there's kind of two responses to the birth of Jesus. There's two responses that happen in the story. One is King Herod being disturbed, the people being disturbed. So I don't know what you make of this story this morning. It might be that you feel a bit disturbed, that it could possibly be true after all. And then too, disturbed by what the implications of that would be. The other option is worship. Because that's what the wise men come to do, isn't it? They say, "We've come. We saw his star and we've come to worship him." And that's exactly what they do. They enter the house, they see the child with his mother Mary, they bow down and they worship. Worship is accepting Jesus for who he is. It's saying, "Yes, you are the King of the Jews. But not only that, you're the King of the world. I'm going to worship you." Jesus has a saying. In the next few chapters, he grows up and his ministry begins. He starts teaching. And one of his great sayings is, "Keep on asking and you'll find. Keep on asking, you'll receive. Keep on seeking, you'll find." The wise men sought. They searched out the baby. They studied from what they knew. They knew about stars. That's what led them on. But God used that. He took them and he brought them all the way to Jesus in Bethlehem. So I don't know, again, where you're coming from today, what your starting point is. But Jesus is there to be found, and his promise is, keep on seeking and you'll find.